Well, in 1986, the remains of an ancient Galilean boat dating from the first century were discovered as the result of a flood. It's now on display. If you ever go to the Sea of Galilee, there's a museum on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, and you're able to see this boat. It's affectionately called the Jesus boat, and it's a beautifully preserved example of the sort of boat that Jesus might have used in this story about when he calms the storm. The context is that Jesus had had a day of teaching large crowds about the kingdom of God, and then he'd kind of honed in and did some deeper teaching to his disciples. But as the day ends, Jesus is tired, and he decides to go across the lake with his disciples in a boat. And as they set sail, Jesus settles down for some much-needed sleep. Have any of you ever been to the Sea of Galilee? Anybody been to the Sea of Galilee? Yeah, a few people. Fantastic. So you'll be able to visualise this a bit more. But apparently the sea, or sometimes it's called the Lake of Galilee, is the lowest freshwater lake on our planet. It's sitting almost 700 feet below sea level, and it's kind of like in a basin with hills and mountains all the way around. So due to its lay-lowing position and the walls and the hills around it means that it's subject to violent storms. Apparently, if you go today in the car parks at the northern end, even now there's a warning sign about the big waves if there is a storm that can come in and sweep and swamp park cars that are parked there. Well, one such storm occurred as Jesus and his disciples seek to go across the lake in the boat. We need to remember that many of Jesus's, or some of Jesus's disciples, were seasoned fishermen. They'd seen storms come and go. They were familiar with this lake. For them to be fearful for their lives must have meant something. And as we put ourselves into this story, I defy anybody who would say that we wouldn't be in the least bit frightened in that situation and in this moment. Well, they wake Jesus, the disciples, in a panic and cry out, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" I wonder, as they woke Jesus, what were they expecting him to do in that moment? Well, whatever they expected, their question almost reproached Jesus for neglecting their safety by sleeping. Of course, we know that Jesus' slumber didn't mean that he didn't care or he was indifferent to the situation. But whatever they were expecting from Jesus as they woke him from his sleep, they neither expected what happened next. They were shocked not only at what Jesus did, but the fact that he had the power to do it. Just as Jesus had rebuked the demons and impure spirits, so he rebukes the wind and tells the waves to be still. I don't know if you know this passage, whether you ever thought the fact that the word rebuke is quite a strange word to use when he talks about rebuking the wind. Because the word rebuke means to express strong disapproval because of somebody's behavior or actions. As we see the sea talked about in Mark's gospel, often it denotes chaos. And actually in the Bible, that also links in with demonic forces. So maybe Jesus here is expressing strong disapproval for the demonic forces that are in the sea. Again, he shows them his power, and immediately we're told all was calm. Now, I think calm is an appropriate word for what must have happened next. We can imagine the silence and the awe in that moment, the contrast from the fierce storm to the calmness of the water, as crashing water slowly returns to a ripple, as the boat's wad plunging up and down is replaced again by a gentle rocking. And as the disciples are still in awe for what they have just witnessed, Jesus turns and asks them the questions, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" If you read Matthew's account of this miracle, you will see that Jesus at least credits the disciples with a little bit of faith. But actually here in Mark, Jesus talks about them having no faith and also that they are really afraid. They are so afraid. Jesus' use of the word still, "have you still no faith," maybe reverts back to try and remind them of all the things that they had already seen him do. They'd seen his authority and power as he preached the word, as he taught, as they watched Jesus cast out demons and heal people. And yet the disciples, Jesus says, still don't have any faith. Even the sea now pays attention to Jesus. But I think it's only after the storm and the disciples' shock and in awe that maybe they begin to have just the smallest inkling of who Jesus is and the extent of his power. Because as seasoned Jews, they would have known their Old Testament. They would have known that when the Red Sea parted, it was God himself who was doing that miracle. It was God who held back the waters so that the Israelites could cross the Jordan River to the Promised Land. And they would have known that it was God who calmed the seas after Jonah was thrown overboard. In this miracle, they could see God. It was God who took the chaos of creation at the beginning of time, of the chaos of creation of the waters, and made order. And maybe the disciples just got a glimpse that Jesus was doing the same thing on the lake that night. So this miracle was something of a revelation for the disciples. They were starting to see the divine nature of Jesus. The one who is asleep in the stern was God in the flesh. Well, as we reflect on this miracle for ourselves and our lives, somebody speaks about storm theology. What we believe about God when storms come in our lives. Because it's often storms that force us to think about the difference between whether we are fearful or whether we have faith, whether we trust God or begin to wobble and doubt him. Like the disciples, I'm guessing all of us find it easy to judge God's care for us and Jesus' care for us by how the circumstances of our lives are playing out. Or whether we get that answer to prayer that we wanted. And of course, we know so much more about Jesus than the disciples did. We know about the cross and resurrection. We know that Jesus has promised to be with us in all of the circumstances of our lives by his Spirit. There might be sometimes it feels like a never-ending set of storms in our lives. But there's an even greater supply of his love which never fails to hold us. Yet sometimes I would say, even with all of that knowledge, it's really easy to wonder sometimes and ask the question, Lord, do you care? Do you really care? But one of the greatest dangers of this story, and particularly if you know it very well, is that we can focus on the storm and the circumstances that the disciples found themselves in rather than focusing on the person of Jesus. Notice as Jesus tries to help his disciples understand and reflect on what has just happened and how they react. He doesn't mention the storm. His questions seek to remind disciples then and now what really matters. Jesus is encouraging us and those disciples then to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, no matter what is happening around us. The people in the boat, the disciples, had committed themselves to following Jesus. They had already heard much about God's kingdom. But actually, the key thing in this miracle, which kind of almost begins to make a bit of a turn in Mark's gospel, is that all of a sudden they had to put into practice what they had seen and what they had heard. They had the challenge of experiencing the truth of who Jesus is, even in the midst of a storm. And I want to say that that is the same for us today as followers of Jesus. You see, with Jesus resting in their midst, the disciples were perfectly safe in that storm. But their waking him up shows how far yet they had to go. We need to be clear that Jesus never promises to calm every storm immediately in our lives. Instead, what he calls us to do is to focus on him and what we know about him in our lives. You know, I wonder whether Jesus wasn't particularly frustrated about the fact that they were fearful. As I said earlier on, I defy anybody to be at least a little bit fearful in those situations. I wonder whether Jesus was fearful because they were so afraid and because they still had no faith. All Jesus is looking for in our lives is that the faith the size of a mustard tree, which can build on and flourish. I want to say that I think that the crux of discipleship is found in this miracle. Jesus wants the disciples then and now to trust him, to grow in our faith and truly believe that his presence within us is all that we need. The reality is that it should be enough for us that the Lord is with us, whether life circumstances are going smoothly or not. Christianity that encourages a life of continual success and prosperity not only leads to frustration and disappointment, but also I want to say that it points us in the wrong place as followers of Jesus. Actually, as we think about our lives, it's not about them being prosperous and successful. It is about having Jesus at the center and knowing that he is with us on our journey and he is sufficient for all of our needs. In 1735, John Wesley and his brother Charles set out from England to Georgia to share the gospel. On the four-month trip, a storm came up suddenly, and while the English men were in the corner crying, a group of Moravians calmly sang hymns and prayed. Wesley was impressed by their faith and inner strength to be able to sing hymns and pray in the face of a dangerous, life-threatening storm, and he later wrote in his journal, "It was then that I realized that mine was a dry land, fair weather faith." It's a challenge for all of us, isn't there? Are we growing and developing faith that is only suitable for the dry land and the fair weathers? Or are we truly seeking to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus and being confident that he will see us through all of the circumstances of our lives?